Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. NATO failed Ukraine still again. Another promise not kept. In fact, the military alliance has no intention of bringing Kiev into NATO. This has always been the plot. Ukraine is an afterthought. Inflicting a strategic defeat on Russia has always been the plan. Crosstalking the NATO summit, I'm joined by my guest, Jan Åberg in Lund. He is director of the Swedish Independent Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research. In Columbus, we have Misty Winston. She is a political activist as well as host of the Misty Winston Show on TNT Radio. And here in Moscow, we have Mike Jones. He is an independent journalist. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want. And I always appreciate it. Jan, let me go to you first. There's so much we can say about this summit that was held in Vilnius. It was built up, covered extensively. It was a bust, okay? But at the end of the day, the two most important things to take away from that, not that if Ukraine made it in or didn't make it in or conditions that can, all that, that's all a footnote. What really matters here is that this summit did not discuss peace and it did not discuss security. Security for all. Jan.
No, it didn't. And that is not in the vocabulary of NATO. I've studied NATO because I wrote a book about it last year and why it should be abolished, 30 arguments. And I went through all the documents. There's no conceptualization of peace. There is defense and deterrence, or deterrence and defense. Then security, then it is pronouncing who is the enemy or who is opponent or who is a potential threat, such as China. It's postulations. It postulates. It's not analysis, and it's condemnation of others, never self-reflection. So the word peace is not there, and it's not a defensive alliance in any academic, reasonably sustainable definition of that word.
Yeah, well, Jan, its primary mission is to stay in business. That's its top goal, is to stay in business. Misty, essentially the same question here, because, you know, we've always heard Stoltenberg, the head of NATO, you know, that Russia has no veto, well, it does, apparently. It does have a veto. That's why Ukraine was not invited and never will be invited into the alliance. They are fooling themselves, and their scribes in the media just lie about it. Go ahead in Columbus.
Yes, I think that that is absolutely correct. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody who's paying a bit of attention that Ukraine has no chance whatsoever of making it into NATO at this point or at any point. I think that this is kind of a carrot that they're dangling in front of them on a stick in order to continue. I think that this is, as Julian Assange once said then about Afghanistan, the goal is an endless war, not a successful war. It applied then. I think it applies now. And I think that the membership into NATO is something that they are just kind of waving in front of Ukraine in order to justify the continuation of using Ukrainian bodies as cannon fodder for this proxy war against Russia.
And Misty, it's really quite amazing that the political leadership in Kiev goes along with it. It's really extraordinary, sacrificing their own people. I suppose Zelensky and his crowd are paid very well. Compensation is very good for these people. Mike, let me go to you. I mean, they talk about allies, when all the allies agree and conditions are met. You know what, my friend? They are farther away from getting into NATO than they were in 2008 when they were invited as a potential invitee into the alliance. They are further away than they are in 2008. Go ahead.
Absolutely right. I'm going to reach back to the United Kingdom and Ben Wallace, who echoed the US saying we can't have a new member in the middle of a conflict. That would just import war into the alliance. And it really baffles me how, you know, this was never considered before, how Zelensky almost walked into it, because the PR has been catastrophic. Even the photographs of Zelensky just standing on his own, completely excluded from what's going on. When we think about NATO, when the allies agree, when have they been able to agree in recent times? They've been divided over a successor to Stoltenberg, divided over cluster bombs, now divided over Kiev, and yet the headlines all read that NATO's been more united than ever. You only need to do a very quick Google search on the minimum requirements for NATO membership. And the US State Department itself, in its archive, explicitly states there is no checklist for membership, but it does say we've made it clear at a minimum there are five following requirements. Number one, new members must uphold democracy, including tolerating diversity. You're absolutely right. That's not been existent in Ukraine for, you know, at least, what, 2008, if not 2014. So no, Ukraine has never had any chance of being in NATO by even the own US's own sort of requirements, as they loosely put it.
Well, you know, that's a very good point, because they talk about democratic norms and rules-based order, which does not apply to Ukraine in any sense. Jan, you know, one of the things that's very interesting is that they say that Ukraine has to win the war to become eligible to be a member. So if they lose the war, do they get to become a member? I mean, I don't understand the logic here. Jan, can you figure it out?
I think the logic is that if war is the only game in town, so to speak, in NATO's towns, and there's not a word about peace negotiation, ceasefire, or anything else reasonable, then, of course, they believe that by pumping in weapons and ammunition and political support and good words, that Ukraine would be able to win over Russia. I think the assumption is that naive. And also, it's very interesting now, in a historical perspective, to look at NATO has been, in various ways, in Ukraine, basically, since, I think, 3 months after Ukraine became an independent state.
Yep.
And everybody in the West who knew anything about security, including a number of U.S. ambassadors to Moscow, including Burns, who is now CIA director but was an ambassador, and tons of scholars in the U.S. and Europe have warned the last 30 years, you may do expansion of NATO, which is against the promises very clearly given to Gorbachev, but you can't do Ukraine, because that means war. And now you had, a couple of days before the Vilnius summit, you had Biden sitting saying basically the same words. I mean, this is a huge blunder. They should never have done what they did in 2008, which was a response to Vladimir Putin's very concerned speech in the Munich Security Conference. So, I mean, this is a total intellectual flop.
Yeah, Misty, it's really interesting when you think about the censorship that's going on. Of course, everyone knows, like, for example, RT was taken off of YouTube. But Jan is absolutely right. Ever since the end of the Cold War, there's been a huge debate about expanding NATO. But according to 1 year ago and 5 months, you can't say that anymore. You get in a lot of trouble for it. I was originally banned from Twitter for quoting Barack Obama on Ukraine. I got banned for that, okay? So it's really quite interesting is what you could, there's a whole literature out there, but all of a sudden, yes, the last 16 months, it's verboten to speak about. Misty, this is the times we live in.
I speak about it all the time.
Let me go to Misty here in Columbus. Go ahead.
Listen, the censorship industrial complex has been completely out of control on a number of issues. This is just one of them. And I think that it is very telling. I think anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions. And I think that that's something that they have been able to avoid in this country. The propaganda machine is very powerful, very strong, and very effective. I think a lot of people are willing and able to go along with whatever line that they're selling to us on a host of issues. This one, I think, is a little bit different. I think that this one, from the jump, I think a lot of people started to question it. They've managed to beat a lot of those people down through censorship, like with yourself, and through other methods of, you know, kind of silencing people through algorithms and shadow banning and that kind of a thing. But I do think a lot of people are questioning this narrative a lot more than they would have maybe in the past. I think post-Iraq, a lot of people are more skeptical when these sort of situations arise. And I think that that's what we're seeing now. And I hope that that continues and we continue to see people push back on this sort of a narrative.
Yeah, Mike, you know, let's think about this here. So let's say hypothetically, Ukraine wins the war against Russia. Then why does it need NATO? Okay, why does it need to join an alliance? Also, if Ukraine most likely will lose this war, why would NATO include a country that lost a war against Russia? I mean, I don't understand the logic of any of this here. Go ahead, Mike.
No, none of it makes sense. As you rightly said, that if they were to win, well, how do they win? Because those goalposts keep changing. I think Biden and his lot were saying that Ukraine would have to retake Crimea as a sort of standard of, you know, restore their territorial integrity. And this has been thrown about a lot. So then if Ukraine doesn't succeed in restoring its 1991 borders, then it doesn't maintain its integrity. Therefore, it cannot be a part of NATO, because part of the conditions, as I understood them, was that the country had to be in control of its borders. So you're absolutely right. It never makes sense. And let's just also remember how President Putin did stress about this expansion of NATO. It was a key concern of the Russian Federation, an existential security risk. And the Western media laughed at him. But in short order, then we had these calls for Sweden and Finland to join, Finland being another encroachment up to the north. And then we have this talk of Ukraine, and suddenly it's celebrated that, oh, look how united we are. Look how Putin has shot himself in the foot. No, you've actually justified his exact concerns, and you've then sort of strengthened the argument that NATO has broken his promise, as has been stressed here to Gorbachev, and Margaret Thatcher being one of them from the UK, who also assured Gorbachev that not one inch east.
Well, so, Jan, I mean, what is the future of NATO? It's hit a brick wall with Ukraine, and I think we're all in agreement. Ukraine will never be a member of that alliance. Russia will not allow it. That's why we have the conflict there now. Jan.
I think what they're doing now is to substitute the word member, which is very clearly in the treaty, with, or not substitute it, but expand that into what they call partners. There are now, I think, 39 partners on all in all parts of the world. And, you know, they are thinking now of planning to set up a NATO office in Japan. All this, and I think this is an extremely important point, what NATO does today is not in accordance with its founding treaty. It's in that sense an illegal activity outside. And that started with the bombing of Yugoslavia in 1999.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What it is is a mechanism. Hang on, Jan. I have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the NATO summit. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing the NATO summit. Okay, right before we went to the break, I was talking with Jan. Jan, you were on a roll, so keep rolling. Go ahead.
No, I just said that from the bombing of Yugoslavia in 99, it has done things, the alliance have done things that are not in any way letter or spirit within its treaty, which is a very defensive UN charter-based treaty. The only difference from the UN charter is Article 5 about, you know, mutual defense of each other inside the group. I could sign that as a peace researcher tomorrow. The fact is that it's breaking 24/7 its own provisions. And I would suggest that there should be established an independent international commission that looks into, of lawyers and others, who would look into how far can NATO deviate from its founding treaty and what can be done about it. And if you ask me about the future, it wants to go global by means of partners because it's running out of members in Europe. And that's where we have to stop it. It simply has to be stopped by a popular movement in the West and other countries outside.
We'll see how it goes. I think NATO's days are numbered. It's going to suffer a strategic, catastrophic defeat in Ukraine. It's the graveyard of NATO. At least I hope so. Misty, I don't want to get too legalistic or anything like that. But you know, there's always this talk about Article 5 of the NATO Treaty. It's actually called the Washington Treaty. But you know, everyone should read Article 1 of the treaty. NATO is an organization under its own rules, cannot get involved in military conflicts using force. Its members must use diplomacy and negotiations. Nobody reads the first article. And I'm going to agree with Jan. They are in complete violation of their own treaty. Go ahead, Misty.
Indeed, yes. And I think that I had to smile there as you were saying that out loud, because it's curious to me that they don't ever actually follow that. I hope that you're correct and that this is going to be the graveyard for NATO. I think that NATO it's long overdue for it to have been abolished. And we're seeing the situation in Ukraine play out, it seems as if you may be correct. I think that they are going to suffer a very strategic defeat here, and it is going to be very difficult for them to spin that in a positive direction for NATO. And I think that that is something that they are trying to contend with now. I think that there's probably a little bit of panic behind the scenes. They're trying to figure out how they can best, wiggle around in this situation and make it, and kind of save face in the best way that they can. I'm not sure how they do that at this point. They are now so far involved. There's no way for them to back out without looking silly. And I think that that's something that they're contending with now behind the scenes, trying to figure out how they can make that play without, making fools of themselves. It's going to be interesting to watch that play out.
Actually, Misty, I do have the wiggle room for them. I shouldn't even say it because I know they'll steal it. You know what they're going to say, Misty? I'm going to tell you what they're going to say. At least Putin didn't make it to Paris. We won. Okay, that's what they're going to do. Oh, that's the room temperature IQ of these people. That's exactly what they're going to do. But Mike, again, they were talking about when the allies agree on conditions and when conditions are met here. We also have the G7. Yes, they're still around now making trouble. They're talking about security guarantees as well. Again, I thought that what do they have to do with the military? With security. I thought they were an economic organization, okay? I mean, again, this is another fiction here to sell to people in the West, how to waste more money on a lost cause. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely right. The G7, as I understood it, were these economic members and powers that came together and discussed such things. So it baffled me when even Zelensky himself said, all right, if we don't get NATO membership, at least we'll get some reassurances from the G7. But we know that everything's been a big fat nothing burger, really, in regards to that. All these security guarantees, it doesn't matter how you want to describe it, all these countries committing to the proxy war. And again, I'll refer back to Ben Wallace saying, we don't want to import war into the alliance. And yet these same people are engaging in this proxy war. They just don't want it directly at them. So they're happy to attack Russia and facilitate the death of Russian soldiers, but they don't want to risk their own soldiers and people. This G7 nonsense is probably, again, where they're just going to line up, take photographs and pat each other on the back and laugh about how they've all invested in the right arms manufacturers. That's the economic side, as far as I can tell.
Well, absolutely. Let's talk about the issue of cluster bombs. I mean, again, rules-based order and all of this nonsense they like to talk about here, that is a very dangerous escalation. And Russia doesn't start to go up the escalation ladder. It usually follows, but it's going to follow this one for sure. Jan.
Well, it's part of modern militarism that you see problems only with one tool in your toolbox, like a hammer. And that means whatever you're trying to do, your tapestry is falling down, you're hammering on it, and finally the wall itself will come down. The idea that this whole problem can only be solved by weapons, I think actually we have a statement from Mr. Stoltenberg in the direction that peace comes with weapons or something like that. Instead of, ceasefire negotiations, UN, OSCE, mediation, et cetera, is just an indication that this organization is outdated. We don't need militarism in this world, and they certainly don't do it because they have 12 times more military expenditures than Russia. What we need is cooperation. What we need is not to waste money, but solve the problems humanity has and reach out and accept that we're going to live in a multipolar world with different cultures, different political ideas, different interpretations of human rights, et cetera. And if the U.S. and its friends and allies will not do that, they will lose. They'll become a periphery. They'll become, in the long run, some kind of developing countries in the future world order 50, 100 years from now. Well, it's not going to take a long time. What we see here is desperation, and cluster bombs is an example of it. When you need to introduce cluster bombs in Ukraine, you're really losing it.
Yeah, well, Misty, I'm glad that Jan said that because this is an act of desperation, and desperate people do desperate things, and I wouldn't put it past them to do other things as well. I mean, it's all about maintaining hegemony. What we have here is Ukraine is just the example, okay? Do you think policymakers in Washington and Brussels give a hoot about Ukraine? They don't at all. They want to give them as much weaponry that their young men can be killed on the battlefield, and the result will be the same. Misty.
Yes. Yes, 100%. And I'm so glad that the word desperation was used, because that is exactly what this is. I think that the United States and the West is like a wounded animal backed into a corner. And you're absolutely right. Our government doesn't even care about the people of this country. And I'm supposed to believe that they care about Ukrainians. It is absurd on its face. And so we're happy to use them as cannon fodder. Many people in high positions of power have said that we will fight till the last Ukrainian. Well, I mean, that is it's a very brave and bold thing for you to say from back home. But I think that the people of Ukraine are going to start to find that quite despicable. I find it despicable. The idea that we are using this country and its people as, you know, a weapon against Russia is really despicable. And so I think that, again, I think that they're starting to lose the narrative here. I think that they're starting to lose control. And I think that this is for sure an act of desperation.
Well, Missy, you couldn't see it, but when you said the governments here don't care about their own people, the other guests on the program nodded their heads in approval. Okay. And I'm agreeing with you as well. Mike, it's really interesting how this propaganda war that is being fought, it's interesting how they've used Zelensky. I think they were a little surprised with his mean tweet, okay? Because, you know, he said, I've done everything you told me to do, everything. And then, you know, they make it down the altar. Sorry, you're not the type of girl for us. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I think he said, like, I've given everything, I demand respect. And even Zelensky was smacked by, again, Ben Wallace saying, well, Ukraine should say thank you more often. Subsequent to that comment, I believe Zelensky released a video saying thank you no less than 47 times in a video. It's really been, well, it would be funny if it wasn't so tragic. This talk about, yeah, fighting to the last Ukrainian is chilling. At the very least, if I just add in a statistic that I came across, is 97% of those people killed by cluster munitions have been civilians.
Yep.
These weapons are not effective on the battlefield. They are not suitable for the battlefield that they're being supplied to. It is desperation to keep this fight going, because remember, we have the 2024 elections. I think the likes of Jake Sullivan, Victoria Nuland and all that are desperate to just keep this going to 2024 and try and get another Democrat in the White House. And that's where Ukraine and Ukrainian people are being sacrificed for what? U.S. politics?
For what? For what?
Exactly.
What is the national interest for Europe? Sentence. What is the national interest for the United States? It's never explained. Jan, I'm glad that Mike brought up that statistic, because given the nature of the regime in Kyiv before the conflict and now, I'm talking about corruption. I really worry that these cluster bombs will be sold to various groups around the world, okay? They're not going to stay in Ukraine. They're too valuable to nefarious forces. Jan.
Well, that's a risk that the West has taken all the time with pumping in weapons into a country that is known for corruption. Secondly, I mean, you talked about the split and what will be the future of the alliance. The cluster bomb thing has been a split, and there's no unanimous opinion about that, like a lot of other issues within NATO's own leadership or leaders. And I think we shouldn't be so surprised, because if you look at all the wars the U.S. has been leading or fighting since Vietnam, they've all been lost or led to withdrawal. So why should we be surprised that if you created enough chaos in Ukraine, you leave because you might have gotten something else you needed? The problem here is that we need some leadership in the Western world that does not think of war and confrontation and sanctions and demonization and threatening behavior and words as the main kind of foreign policy. It's totally outdated, as I said. My view was, and I said it at that time, 33 years ago, pull down NATO because the Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union has disappeared. And that was a raison d'etre at that time of the alliance. Therefore, the raison d'etre today of the alliance is only one thing and one word, expansion. Expansion, okay. Expansion. It has nothing to bring to the world anymore. It's an outdated, it may have been useful earlier, I don't know. But it's not useful for the future of the world.
That's well said, and that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Columbus, London, and here and Moscow. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.